Hello and welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today we're joined by an incredible being who lives and breathes sales. They've worked their way up from recruitment consultant to sales manager for enterprise company ICIS. Today we're going to delve deep into the world of sales, giving you actionable takeaways and talking openly about Teddy's journey to a sales manager. It's Teddy Peck. Teddy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. Thank you for joining us. It's a lovely British accent you've got there, Teddy, and it's great to hear it. Yes, it is. So, Teddy, we start the podcast the same way every time. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
So I'm someone that didn't know what they wanted to do when they were approaching the end of university. I think similarly to you, Jack, I studied music at university as well. So maybe sales is part and parcel for being somewhat interested in music. So I basically didn't know what I was going to do, knew that it was time to get a job, having not really had one. Googled some, you know, generic stuff that one might want, like progression and sort of money, and then paired it with supposed characteristics I had, like confidence and competitiveness, and naturally sales and recruitment came up. And then I was playing rugby a few weeks later, and one of the guys said, "Do you have any idea what you're going to do when you leave university?" And I said, "Oh, well, I've been doing some Googling around, like maybe sales or recruitment or something like that." And he said, "Well, that's interesting, because I work for a sales recruitment company. Why don't I put you in touch with the CEO?" And a lot of things that have happened to me all are about, you know, people that you know, rather than any sort of much merit to what I've done, I think. So I went there and, you know, I'm like I looked about 15 when I started working. That's why I grew a beard, really. And so then I worked at a recruitment company for 18 months, absolutely hated it, but it was the best thing for me to cut my teeth. I really was very, very immature and didn't have a clue who I was and what I wanted to do and why I wanted to do it. Spent 18 months there and I couldn't do anymore. So I left. My dad introduced me to another recruitment consultant who put me in touch with Acuity that I was at for six and a half years or so. 4 years after starting there, I moved to America. That was very cool, really cool opportunity. I arrived and they shut the office the next day for COVID. Then during that time, I invested in some sales training because I was introduced to Marcus Kauke by Donal, who also introduced me to you guys. And that was the best money that I've spent. Fast forward about a year later, I moved into managing a team. Fast forward then, I moved companies to a sister company, which is ICIS, which I've been at for about 20 months now. So that's kind of a journey of who I am and how I got here. And I think that the problem I solve is, I'd say, I help salespeople have a sales career rather than a sales job. That's the best way I can put it.
I like that. And what was going on in your life? Maybe you don't need to go too deep, but what was going on in your life? Obviously, we all know the Lord and Savior, Marcus Kauke. If you've listened to any of our podcasts, you may have heard us refer to him. We've had him on the podcast, the guy that trained Benjamin Dennehy. So to sit down with Marcus and get training, you're at a point in your life where you're like, I want to get bollocked and I want to get better. So what was going on in Teddy's life where you decided that it was time to get good at selling?
I worked in quite a ripe market in the UK and I got really good at taking orders. I'd like to think I did some stuff okay, but for the most part, you know, situationally, I was very fortunate, looked after the legal market in the UK for a company that was endorsed by the UK Law Society for what we did. So that made things simpler. And I had a great client base and I had, you know, new clients that were interested in working with company. When I moved to the US, they asked if I would look at doing something similar in the US, but we weren't endorsed by the same body. There weren't the same stringent, very focused regulations or compliance requirements for US law firms. And I really struggled, really, really struggled. And I didn't really know I was so bad at my job. And Donal had recently started training with Marcus and I spoke to him most days, to be fair, because I was locked down in New York and I didn't know anyone. And the difference I saw in 4 weeks was unbelievable. And I was like, what is it that's happened to you? And he told me, I started working with this guy. You might want to meet him. I think you might like him. And so then I spoke to him and I was done. So I really didn't know. I don't think it was anything other than I had some money I was going to spend at a pub or a bar, and I couldn't. And then I felt kind of a bit helpless. And I thought, if I've moved to New York, I can't fail. you know, what if I don't get to stay here for the amount of time that they said I could because I don't do a good job? And why is it not as easy as it was back there? And I kind of just, I felt sort of useless. And so I turned for some help from someone.
Nice. And what a person to turn to.
Very
someone
lucky.
Someone that makes you feel like a white belt every day. That's what I like about Marcus. What I'm going to call it, I'm like, am I an idiot? One of the things that I think it's going to be interesting to talk to you about, because you're going to have a unique perspective. And I think we've made this mistake. We've worked in business where people have made this mistake. The link between taking a good salesperson and promoting them to some form of sales leadership. Mm-hmm. Why does that go wrong? And what have you learned about that journey?
I think so. I'm the youngest of four boys. And I'll come back to the question. Sometimes my girlfriend says I give too much context, but here I think it's the moment to do it. I'm the youngest of four boys. I'm also the smallest of those four boys. And I also look the youngest of those four boys naturally. So I had a massive chip on my shoulder when I started working. I felt so young and immature and kind of left to one side and stuff that my original desire to go into management was to have kind of some perceived control and power over people. And I would have been god awful. You know, if that had been what happened, it was a completely self-motivated idea and a something that was only for me to get something out of it. So I think that's probably a reason why it wouldn't have been a good thing to put me in that role at that point. And that might be why it goes wrong sometimes. I think, you know, if someone's very focused on hitting their numbers or achieving their numbers or earning a certain amount of money or giving a certain work-life balance or not having to deal with people's emotions too much internally, then maybe they're better off staying in kind of a high performing sales role. But when I started working with Marcus, I mean, I had always had an interest in coaching people, and I would take on, you know, new people and try and help them and train them as best I could. But when I started working with Marcus, I watched how he was coaching people and how he was training people and how quickly those that applied it actually got something for themselves. And so I set up I don't know if you know Rory Capon or Sean Doc, you know Sean, right? 555 Club. Yeah. So Rory and Sean were in the kind of cohort that we were in. And they set up an accountability group. And I was like, look, you two are the best. I'd like to see if we could do something similar. Then Leanne Fontaine, I don't know if you know her, but she also was in that as well. She's superb. And Donal was then in that. And I just absolutely loved trying to help people get better at what they were doing. And really not for anything that was in it for me, because it was people that really their success or development had no direct impact on me. And then I realized, oh, this might be quite fun to do for more people. So I think if you fall in that second category, then that's where it might go well. But I think where it goes wrong is when you have a self-motivated idea behind it. And you guys probably know the same thing. It seems remarkable that it could be so poorly chosen a manager so frequently. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, massively, massively. And I think it's that thing every time, isn't it? What makes a good salesperson doesn't necessarily make a good manager. It's two very, very different skill sets. Mm-hmm. There's something interesting that's occurred throughout the conversation. It can't just be down to working with Marcus, but it feels like there's this reflective self-awareness. Like there was Teddy, and now I really know Teddy and what was motivating him, and now I'm Teddy today. What was the moment where that started to happen?
I was a massive prick for a while, to be honest. I was obnoxious and arrogant and not a great version of who I could be. And thankfully, I have very good close friends that spent 2 years telling me that. And then finally, the penny dropped. So, and then it's just a case of, I think, you know, Marcus would always say, spend an hour a week in self-reflection or an hour in a day in learning and an hour a week in self-reflection, write a journal. I'll be honest, he'll probably hit me for this, but, you know, I never did the journaling myself. Don't tell anyone. But I just would spend, I think during COVID, the only people I really could speak to were my family and my friends that I knew from back home. And so we just spent a lot of time talking. My family, especially, what I sort of, saw is that I was really fortunate, I think, when I moved, you know, compared to everyone else that was stuck in the same place, doing the same thing that they were wishing to do, the same thing they'd always done, but not being able to, and just doing it by looking through a window or on Zoom. I was in New York City, somewhere I'd only seen really on the TV, And there was like, I walked from the east to the west of the city and I saw 50 people. You know, you see 50 people standing in line for one door at the subway these days. You know, it was remarkable. So what I noticed from that is spending time talking to my parents and using some of the stuff that Marcus had taught me allowed them to kind of deal with some of the stuff they were going through. And I think that was the first part where I started reflecting on, you know, what sort of is important to me. And that's close relationships with those that are important to me. That's my family, that's my friends. And yeah, you know, I'd prefer not to go back and be a prick again, to be honest.
It's good though, Teddy, because obviously sometimes you have to go to that place to, otherwise you'd never be filled with gratitude of where you were. Probably should have told you before, Teddy, this podcast probably isn't the best place to start revealing your deepest, darkest secrets because people might listen to it, but so we're here now. So you've alluded a few times to the things that Marcus taught you. So if somebody's listening to this and they're wanting to be better, okay, what are the key takeaways that I always think like when you have training or you're learning something, the stuff that just sticks, that's there, that you don't have to work hard to kind of remember, are like the biggest lessons. So what are the things that you took away from that training session that you would pass on to anybody that wanted to be a better human being or a sales manager?
I'm trying to think of ones that aren't too cliche, if you know what I mean. Like nothing.
It's all right. We don't mind a bit of cliche.
That sort of thing. I think, you know, that sales is so little of it is art, really. You know, the job can be learned by, in my opinion, basically anyone. You know, if you have some level of interest in learning a skill that will help you in all walks of life, personal or professional, regardless of whether you're in sales or not. I think that was the biggest thing I took away from it, was how applicable everything I learned was in my personal life. Another big lesson is just like, it's not that easy, but just practice is the most important thing. I think having recognized at university the times where I might practice 4 weeks before a performance rather than 4 days, the difference is quite telling. And so I think the same thing with sales is if you actually just sit down and practice an hour a day, you can get pretty good pretty quick. And I know you asked me about some of the lessons, but some of the outcomes I got from it, I think that the following three jobs that I've got, I didn't have anywhere near the qualifications for based on the job spec, let's call it, or, you know, job description. I had never managed anyone. They were asking for 4 years of management. I'd only managed for a year. They were asking for 7 years of management. So I think, you know, the opportunities that you can get from really understanding your craft when you're sat in front of someone who probably has taken an interest in sales, maybe they're a VP or something more senior, it goes a long way with those people. And the final thing is I don't think I realized it at the time, but not many people invest in themselves financially. And apart from more frequently those that make it higher up the corporate food chain, as it were. And I think, again, that goes a long way if you're trying to move into management or you're trying to develop your career in some way, shape or form.
And then if you're on the floor and you're teaching all these, the next generation of salespeople, and you're trying to work out who you think is going to be the next in line and who's going to be a good somebody to fill your shoes as you progress, what kind of attributes are you typically looking for? So if we look at our team, what should I be looking for to say you've got what it takes to be an amazing sales manager? Actually, you're going to be better working in sales and focusing on that art form.
So I was thinking about this beforehand and trying to, over the last kind of couple of months, I've done a couple of podcasts, and I think this is where I've come to it. It's like there's about four or five things, even away from attributes to begin with, because I think, you know, empathy and stuff like that comes into these. But if I'm looking to hire a manager, have they ever expressed any interest whatsoever in moving into management because they actually wanted to move into management? Like if there's a no to that one, big, big worry, in my opinion. Certainly to move them quickly, maybe it's a conversation to be had with them to see whether they're just a bit shy about it. Have they ever expressed interest in coaching? Have they ever like gone out and used any kind of initiative to coach new people, other people, or different people within the team? Again, if the answer is no to that, probably the most important thing of what we do is to coach other people so we don't you know, so we don't have to continuously try and help them at every stage they start to learn it. I think the other thing is, once someone explained to them all of the blockers and all of the issues and all the challenges you will face when you become a manager, were they still interested in becoming a manager? Like, if someone sat down and said, you'll make less money, if someone sat down and said, you will have to work out if you're a teacher, a parent, an adult, a therapist, you know, a brick wall someone wants to punch or something else, you know, and you'll have to balance those conversations probably with very little help from other people. And will you be okay if no one is honest with you to begin with? And everyone just says they want to do the stuff you said because you're the new boss, and then try and work out if they actually, like, once someone's told this person all that, do they still want to do it? And if the answer to those is yes, then I think that's a pretty good indication. And has someone asked, you know, what are your actual motivations behind wanting to manage? And I'll go back to the example I gave. First one, power and control. Second, I don't see why we should allow salespeople to struggle through life and be put to blame when they don't get any coaching or help, but are the ones that are required to bring in money. You know, if that's kind of more of where people's motivations sit, then that might be better. But in terms of characteristics, I think someone that has a good handle on what the sales process is, someone that is patient, empathetic, and can pick out what people are saying when they're not actually saying it out loud. I know that was a lot, but those are kind of some of the things I've thought about if I was going to hire someone into a management role.
We can edit that pause back in.
What did I miss, do you think?
You missed nothing. Nothing. I mean, we're still learning. We've got no management experience before we started this business. So some of these questions that we ask are free consultation for us. But there's definitely...
How are you finding it?
There's things when... We were just on a podcast as guests before this. There were things that I think I thought would work at the start that just didn't in practice. Mm-hmm. So having like a friends kind of relationship with people and the boundaries being slightly blurred and letting people know a bit more about behind the scenes, and just some of that stuff just didn't work because you'll always get the person who takes advantage of that. And I think in both offices, we experienced that, didn't we, Jack? Like, you know, where you've let someone in a bit too far and they've taken advantage of it. But do you think that's fair, Jack? Or
I think that's incredibly fair.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sorry, go on, Teddy. I was going to say, how did you rebalance that?
I was, weirdly enough, I was doing some sales training for one of our clients who were using us and then wanted to replace us by training their own team. And they had a business that was the size of probably the next stage that we were going to go into. And I just sat down with the business owner for over lunch and just said, what can you tell me about where I am now and what the next bit feels like? Mm. And he just laid it out to me. He was like, it probably feels like this. And you're probably noticing these problems. And I was nodding along. And he went, okay, so for the next bit, you need to have it set up more like this kind of relationship with people. And he was exactly right. It was like a weird light bulb moment about something that I probably already knew deep down anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like you asked a good question there to find that out. If it makes you feel any better, I have the same concerns of being too friendly. I think, I don't know if you guys found this, one of the mistakes I walked into again and again was like thinking that I didn't need to make it as explicit as I needed to make it, because for me, I would just have done it. You know, like, and that sounds kind of arrogant, but like, there's a guy actually I want to introduce you guys to that I think you really like, who Donal introduced me to, unsurprisingly, called Fergus Connolly. And he's like a high performance coach. He worked with the San Francisco 49ers, Liverpool Football Club, and a bunch of others. I had a call with him once and I said, I've got this situation and I don't understand how I can make it more clear that this thing should happen. Like, so I have a whole, surely like you guys, like an expectations document. And it, you know, I couldn't have thought of anything else I needed to add in there. So you need to do this for a company to you, you to me to you. This is everything that's going to happen. And this is how I expect and what you should expect. And there was one thing I missed on there. And I said to him, I was like, surely I don't need to write that in though, right? He's like, yep, you do. You do have to write the things that even you wouldn't think you need to do in there. Because like you say, people might not pick up on it, or they might not be the same as you, or they might unfortunately take advantage of that situation, which is, yeah, very confusing to begin with.
Exactly. There's also people in sales settings who are playing a short-term game, as in they're thinking of the day's job rather than the long-term job that needs to be done. And obviously, if you're focused on volume rather than quality, that presents issues. And there was lots of stuff. We've nailed it now, surely.
Oh, like, everything's perfect. I'm sure.
Everything's perfect now. Yeah, exactly. But yeah. So what do you think the relationship is between? Because I'm interested in this piece where you've gone out and sought self development, but the self awareness might have come afterwards. So I was led to believe that self-development can't happen without self-awareness. So what's the relationship between those two things?
Feels like you might be a better person to answer that question, to be honest. I've never really thought too much about that. I guess if I just spitball, I guess you can't have one without the other. I'm not sure the order is that important. I think, well, actually, maybe that's not true. I did self-reflection because Marcus told me to, not because I wanted to, I think. And then it became more of a self thing. Once you start reflecting on something like, oh, I'm crap at this part, I better get better at that part, then I think maybe that's the trigger to be a bit more aware that you could also be crap at a lot of other things, like professionally and personally, and there might be some time to spend kind of thinking about that. I don't know, does that, it's kind of a crap answer, mate, but I wasn't 100% ready for that.
It's a good answer. Sorry, I'll hit you with some curveballs along the way.
Yeah, go along.
You mentioned at the start what your motivations were in terms of there was a control aspect. There's probably that piece that goes back to with you and your brothers. But now on the other side of it, what's the motivation now? What's the why?
I just think it's unacceptable that people can have a job that goes for 20, 30 years, get very little training, very, very little good training, and are the ones from a personal rep salesperson point of view, like be hung out to dry when it doesn't work. And then from a company point of view, expect great results and growth, but give nothing. You know, I just think that setup is it's so awful. And both parties are completely getting the shit end of the stick, really, excuse my language, but that's the truth. No one's winning in that scenario. And I didn't have a clue at how much better it could be and how much more enjoyable your job could be until I got some proper coaching. And I'd like to do my best to try and help at least a few more people get that coaching as well, and at least to a certain level. And when I can't take them any further, introduce them to you guys, or introduce them to Marcus or Benjamin, or someone that can take them further than I can. You know, and that's kind of the motivation. It's just I don't want people going through a career just repeating the same year over and over is, you know, probably what we both are thinking at the moment. But yeah. And so that's from to a rep. My next thing, I think, is taking that same principle into managers, either first-time managers, long-term managers, or people considering to become managers. Because I was writing down, you know, what coaching do managers get? The sales methodology of that company and half a day on how to coach, like maybe, you know, this is how you coach our, what's the word, like, when it belongs to you. Oh, I can't remember. Don't worry about it. I actually can't remember. I'm not playing you here. I genuinely cannot remember what it's called. You know, when you, don't worry, you get training in the sales methodology, and then you get half a day on how to coach that methodology to the rest of your team. And that's it. Disagree?
No, I'm not necessarily disagree. I suppose that is help ever in your world actually, Mr. Jones, you've wasted 5 years of your life and you shouldn't be in this business anyway. You shouldn't be in sales. Is that ever help?
I think it has to help if it's not the right role for them. I've not had to do it yet, but I'd like to think if I had to, I would. Have you guys had the same thing where you've had to kind of say to someone, look, I'm just not convinced that this is the best thing for you?
Yeah, go on, Jack.
Well, I was going to, let me ask you back, Teddy. I guess you sound like you're very compassionate as a person, and there's a lot of empathy. I guess what do you think, without giving too much context. What do you think the difference are in your management style and your coaching because you work for a company? So working for a company, and then if it was you as Teddy Beck, as Teddy Peck as a consulting or a management or your own company, what would you say are the big differences when it comes down to that? Do you still feel like you've got, because you've not been trained in that sense, do you still feel like you've got full autonomy of that situation? Or is there always a little voice in the back of your head saying, can I say this? Should I say this? Is this the right decision?
So I think that's part of right at the beginning around helping people have a sales career, you know, rather than a sales job. Yeah, I think I have to help people understand why I might be saying certain things. And so, you know, I'm willing to accept that there are things that companies require people to do. I've had it, I still do, that I don't agree with, but that's what is required. And so you can deliver the message in that way, and not, I wouldn't feel uneasy about that with my team. To a certain extent, I feel a little held back by some of the things I can say, but not much. And I think a lot of that is managing how it's kind of picked up and how it's perceived by the people that work for you. And it's, you know, it's a case of helping them understand that if a career is what they want, sometimes you might not always agree with everything that is done, but it needs to be done. You know, the ever-changing way you have to do forecasts, for example. I probably wouldn't do it the way we do it or have done it at other companies, but that's not my decision. And so you just have to be comfortable letting go of some of that stuff and focusing on the stuff that you do have autonomy to fix. And I think the final thing on that is, like, one of the hardest things I've found to interview for is people with initiative. I just find it so difficult to know how to do that. But initiative is the only thing I've found that 100% separates those that I want to work for me for my entire career and those that I'm okay if they continue to work for me or they don't. And I think sometimes companies need people that will take a bit of initiative to try something that they might not be telling them to do to prove that it's a better way of doing things.
Give us an example of initiative. Talk to us about that. Give us an example of what you're looking for.
So it's like the difference between coming to someone and saying, hey, can you help me out with this thing? And coming to someone and say, I've tried two ways, but neither of them work. Can you help me out with this thing? You know, I try and have with my team, there's any open white space in my calendar or diary for the English is, for us English, I should say, it is open to you. And you may book time with me whenever you want between this hour and this hour. However, you need to come and know what you want to get out of it at the end. And you need to have been able to demonstrate that you've tried other ways to fix it first. And if you don't do those, we'll cancel the meeting and reschedule when you have. And some of those people then pick up that that is initiative that they need to generate for themselves because it's beneficial for themselves. And others might not be quite there yet.
It's I love it, Teddy. It's a Kalki special. And I sometimes voice note Zach on a Monday morning, especially if we've been going through testing times in the past. And I go, I'm listening to Kalki podcast. I'm in a Kalki mood today. I'm going to go in. And we're going to kick everyone's ass metaphorically. So it's really good. I guess on that initiative front, I think that is a great example of initiative, especially in the generation, because I would imagine that you're kind of a similar age to ourselves, Teddy. But I would say that there's that fine line where initiative is like, as an employee as well, it's a fine balance of this person wants to take too much initiative, where actually you'd probably be better off, and finding those people where you're not just an order taker that wants to just come in and just you're here for the ride, and then you don't just want to come in and change everything up and be a pioneer of your own success. I think it's like finding those people that are in the middle that want to change and want to drive forward, but are also happy to do that as part of a community and a company, and they have no intention to do that on their own. I mean, is there any way that you look for that to get rid of the magpies who are always looking for the next money-making side hustle?
Like to try and avoid hiring like outliers or kind of mavericks, as they might like to be tagged as.
That's a nice way of saying it.
I would have called them something else too.
I don't know if I've ever run into a situation where I've only hired three people during the time that I've managed people. I have a fairly, wrongly or rightly, a fairly good retention of staff, I think, which is nice. Sorry, there's some internet, I think, on my side. My bad. So I don't know if I have a very specific way of sifting through those that maybe are mavericks or otherwise, that the best way I found to find people was probably a Marcus thing, or maybe it was a you guys thing, or maybe it was a Benjamin thing. Anyway, I stole it from someone.
We're all the same.
Yeah. Was to get people to cold call me if they wanted to work for me. Mm. I put that out on LinkedIn. I put it on every WhatsApp group possible that would share it. And so it got a fair amount of views. And I think it got about 16,000-17,000 impressions, right? And it got 10 people tagged in it. And I get it. I'm not Google. No one's heard of my company. No one's heard of me. You know, there's no real like, oh God, I'm desperate. It's not like someone actually well known. But of all of those, I got 2 calls.
Wow.
And although one of those was a really good call, and one of those got hired, and that guy has got the level of initiative that you need. So maybe that's a good sign, but I really don't know. Maybe you can give me some help. I don't know. How would you go about trying to sift out the mavericks?
We've got a few different techniques now that we've thrown in. One is we can catch people in lies quite well. So, and we tend to, it might sound cruel, but we tend to be able to get someone caught up in a lie and lying to us over and over and over again. And at the end, we just slowly unravel it backwards and just show, like, this is the story you've just told me. And there's all sorts of weird examples of that from someone who told, the weirdest one's probably someone told us they were in Manchester.
But they're in Malawi.
The sun shining in the background. It was like, but it's not.
Don't say it like that was the giveaway, that there was sun, so they couldn't have been in Manchester.
Whereabouts are you? Do you know Aldi? Be like, yeah. It's not sunny, though, is it? Aldi. Anyway, one of the really impactful ones is telling people we don't think they've got it in the interview. Like, as in, I don't think you've got what's going to be required. And look, it's not for everyone. And then seeing, do they double down and defend it and sell it a bit, or do they go, yeah, you're probably right, see you later, which does happen.
I also like the mislabel where like you, or you label it and see what they say, but like you'll go, Teddy, I'm getting like strong, you seem quite entrepreneurial, I'm guessing you're not, and then they'll go, no, I am, I've got this drop shipping business on the side, and they go, right, okay, that's a red flag.
Just got to watch out for them saying they are, because they want you to, they think that's what you want to hear, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
But then maybe it's a sign that they might not be quite right.
Anyway. Some people go, no, really don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, oh, I actually like this person.
There's definitely people who want to come and work here for the training and then leave. And we've got to be careful of that. Like, they know I can come in and get 6 weeks pretty solid training and then go off and do my own thing. And we had, like, I don't remember him, Jack, that guy that he was really honest about it. He was like, oh, well, now you've figured it out and I've got you. Could you give me some advice while we're here?
Yeah, and he was fine. Like, I've had people that have now gone on to set up their own kind of, say, copycat businesses, and they've been honest and be like, I want to come and work for you. It's like, you're just going to go and do your own thing. No, I'm not. I want the training. Mm. Lo and behold, a month later, they've done it. It's like, just do that. Like, or like you say, Teddy, invest in yourself. Like, we're never big on, like, you don't have to spend money with us. Like, go to the source, go to Marcus or go to Benjamin, like go and get some training, whatever. If you want to give us your money, great. If not, go and get some training, get better. Or everything's pretty much on YouTube anyway.
Yeah, buy a book.
Like people, a lot of people, yeah, exactly. Like go and get some Sandler stuff. Like a lot of people think that we've had training with Benjamin, but we've never actually sat down and done like one-on-one coaching or anything like that, or any masterclasses. It's more, I've listened to a lot of his podcasts, and you kind of study it and then you learn it and then you put it into practice. And but it comes back to that accountability, self-development, self-awareness piece, and have they got it? Teddy, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I thought I was going to get a charming American man, but I've got a charming British man. It's been brilliant. And I can tell, like, obviously you're very passionate about what you do. One last question. For people that want to get better as a sales manager or just as a human, what's the, maybe I'll let you have 2 or 3, but what are the non-fiction books that people should be reading?
Oh, so I know you had him on twice. My favorite sales book is Gap Selling. Although I think it's very similar to Sandler Sales, which is the way that I was trained, I think Gap Selling as a book is a really superb way to understand it all. So first, if you're thinking about being a manager, you do need to have a solid understanding of what process you're following. And that's a really nice step-by-step. In the same way that gym camps start with no is a far more comprehensive version of Chris Voss's Never Split the Difference. My advice to people is start with Never Split the Difference. And if you really want to understand all the all of the stuff that Chris was taught by Jim and a few others, then go and restart with no. Those three are really great, because I think people that read Never Split the Difference have really good tactics, but I don't think they always necessarily understand the underlying necessity of intent, which I think you get from start with no. So those three are the ones that I would suggest for people.
I like. Good stuff. Teddy, if anybody wants to get in touch and pick your brains, do a coaching session with you, where can they find you?
They can call me. My number's on my LinkedIn profile.
They're not going to call you, Teddy. Where can they DM you? Come on.
They can call me. If they don't want to do that, they can message me on LinkedIn. Nice. Teddy Peck.
Amazing. Teddy Peck.
Big load of hair in a face. There you go. So
the American dream. America's next sweetheart. Thank you so much, Teddy, for joining us.
Thanks very much. Teddy. Appreciate it.